Coming at you live from a Toys R Us bargain bin near you, it's Cartoon Night in Canada.
Hey, what you watching?
Got a problem with cartoon?
Welcome to yet another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada, a nostalgic podcast where we dig through the animated past to find what cartoons made here in Canada are worth remembering. I'm your co-host, Chris Lucy Antonio.
And I'm your co-host, Sylvie Kettles.
And Sylvie, there's something in the air.
What is it?
No, it's not COVID.
Well, it's
well, that
too.
Is in the air.
Yep.
I'm living proof
of that.
And in the morgues. Okay, that's a downbeat. No, it's the holiday season.
Oh, right, there is that.
And you know what that means?
Office Christmas party?
No, those are just pains in the ass. I'm talking about anime. Yes, exactly.
My favorite thing. There is...
My secret shame.
No, there is going to be a showing of Tokyo Godfathers at my local theater this year. I'm so excited.
Same with my theater, the always dependable Review here in Toronto. They are also showing Tokyo Godfathers.
Fuck yes!
Hopefully I'll be healthy enough by then to watch it.
Best Christmas movie ever!
No arguments here, but yes. In our grand tradition of programming good, we are doing another theme month because they're kind of fun.
Well, you know, we finished with our 2-month Spooktopia Spectacular.
Yeah, yeah, and what
then
better
we were like,
way?
We're not gonna do a full month of Christmas. That's boring.
That's lame. I don't want to do that.
That's been done.
Listen, I respect your religious freedoms, but religion has no place in this podcast.
But my religion is fucking anime.
Yeah, I remember that T-shirt too. So yeah, we have decided, kind of haphazardly, to program a month of what we're calling Canadubcember. Now, some of you might know that Canadub is our side program where we talk about the Canadian-produced dubs of popular anime. This is not going to be that.
Yeah, no, we're not stopping there.
No, that only cracks the surface of the bizarre relationship this country has with anime.
Especially in, like, the mid to late 2000s, we were kind of obsessed.
The long bandied about Western anime boom that we have talked extensively about on this podcast.
Yes. Thoughts are had on this podcast.
So, the idea for this month of programming, to welcome in the holiday spirit, is we are going to be covering some series and shows that... are productions of Japan, and also not, but are also in the anime spirit. Man, I thought this out very well.
Well, I mean, especially for the case of today's episode, a case can absolutely be made that this is an anime, because this is, like, a co-production with an anime studio. My rule of thumb has generally been... the origin of a show is basically where was it storyboarded.
Okay, that's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. So in this case, I believe it was storyboarded in Japan by TMS Entertainment.
Yes, it was.
So, yeah. So this is legally Japanese. However,
legally
it was,
speaking.
Yeah, however, it is extensively co-produced with our friends at Nelvana.
But mostly this month is here to highlight that extensive cross-cultural exchange that happened throughout the 2000s, where Canada was just getting in on the anime market and taking a hands-on approach rather than just licensing series and dubbing them here in, usually in Vancouver, like we have covered on Canadub.
Yeah, Or, like, your marathon productions that were heavily anime-inspired, but in which Japan was not involved.
Maybe outside of the intro to some of those shows, but otherwise, no. Those are fully French-Canadian.
Even then, I'm pretty sure those opening sequences were done in Korea.
Yeah, usually that is the case. So it's going to be a nice mix of Canadian-Japanese co-productions, anime-inspired things, and a secret third thing that has absolutely maybe nothing to do with Canada at all.
But we're dedicated to our craft.
And our bit of technically Canadian, the best kind.
The best kind!
So, without further ado, shall we get into that dark, unfortunate period of the anime boom of just selling hunks of plastic to kids?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you do not remember. You do not remember this huge part of our childhood where we were begging our parents to just...
No, I do remember, and that's why I'm not calling it a dark period.
Oh, this is the peak.
This is peak. I miss this era.
You miss the thinly veiled toy commercials.
Yeah.
Children's entertainment.
Okay, let me clarify. I miss being a child watching these thinly veiled toy commercials.
I mean, they were an art form in themselves.
Yep.
They could get you excited for, say, rolling pieces of plastic that barely transformed on poorly produced mats.
I do play Dungeons and Dragons.
Self-call out there. All right, well, without further ado, shall we roll into it?
Let's brawl. I don't know if that's a thing they ever
say. No, that's what they say. It's embarrassing for this show. Okay. What are you gonna do? The odds are stacked against you. Back against the wall. Gotta give it your all. This is the final stand. The power's in your hands. Two worlds collide on the inside. You gotta fight for. So for today's podcast, we are taking a look at Bakugan Battle Brawlers, an international co-production between fucking TMS Entertainment, Dentsu Incorporated, and who else but the fucking bear, Nelvana Limited.
That's our guy!
Man, what a blunt rotation. More importantly, the series was created alongside the Bakugan toy line composing of Transforming Marbles and Card Games, which was launched a year before the series was released, created in like a weird agreement between Sega Toys and Spin Master.
I don't know what you're talking about. It was in fact created by Daniel Dan Cusso and his best friend Shun Kazumi.
I'm ignoring that. You are too deep in the lore.
That's canon.
Yes, it's canon.
That and lore is described in the opening monologue.
Yes, and the Yu-Gi-Oh card game was created by ancient Egyptians and then westernized by Seto Kaiba.
Yeah. Could you call it westernized?
I don't... Does Yu-Gi-Oh take place in Japan?
I think it does!
Because you have Yugi Moto and Joey Wheeler from the Bronx sharing a classroom.
Don't worry about Joey Wheeler. His
I'm always worried about Joey Wheeler.
His name in the original anime is Jonoichi.
He's gotta protect his sister's eyesight. I think his sister went blind, and if he wins a card game, he can restore his sight. Yu-Gi-Oh!
Domino-cho is a fictional Japanese city.
There we go. Okay, so it does take place in Japan. Yeah. I've been called out as a fake fan of the superior show Yu-Gi-Oh! But anyway, the show we're talking about today... The first series aired in Canada between February of 2008 and February of 2009, lasting, as most first-run anime series do, at 52 episodes, before three follow-up series were later released.
Don't worry about them.
Hmm?
Don't worry about them.
We will never touch them.
Oh, I might.
We will never touch
them.
We'll
never touch the shows themselves. I have thoughts, though.
That's unfortunate.
Not about the shows, just about the way Bakugan has gone.
Okay, that's more worrisome, then. I have no idea where that's going to go. The series was directed by Dragon Ball Z stalwart Mitsuo Hashimoto, some serious power behind the series.
Yeah.
And befitting any multimedia franchise spanning toys and audiovisual entertainment coming from Japan in the mid to late 2000s, it was a massive hit and has experienced multiple attempts to reboot or continue the story and the franchise up until this year, 2023.
Yeah, if you want modern-day Bakugan, you can still find it.
Fun little note here, the latest series, which is a Netflix exclusive that premiered in September, they originally did the rollout premiere on Roblox.
You're fucking kidding.
The first two episodes of the 2023 Bakugan series were available to watch in Roblox. Just know, they know their audience, I think.
I mean, yeah, I guess you're not wrong.
I have no idea. Typical with our approach to anime, where there is not a mean episode available, we went with the premiere episode, Bakugan: The Battle Begins, released in Japan as Dragon Warriors, original Canadian air date February 24th, 2008. Just a quick note here, the Japanese release of the first season predated the Canadian release by a full calendar year, with this episode specifically premiering at April of 2007. This would be the only season to air first in Japan.
Yeah, everything else past that has always premiered in Canada and the United States.
With the fourth season being exclusive to North America, Japan did not want this anymore.
Good for them!
They had standards in this case.
They were like, you know what? You know what? At this point, we've done your dirty work for too long.
You know what, Nelvana? You take the reins on this one, buddy.
No, you fucking star-sniffing bear. For the love of God, take your show. Just take it. Take it and go, please.
As tradition with these shows that have a very long paragraph of information over the intro, I copied it down verbatim and now I'll read it to you.
Oh, good, please. Because I forgot most of it.
So, bearing in mind, what is Bakugan Battle Brawlers? This is your first exposure to this soon-to-be media sensation.
This is your taste.
Ahem. I know this is going to sound weird, but one day, my whole world changed. You following along?
Uh-huh, I'm still there.
You see, cards started dropping from the sky, coming down like rain. At first, we didn't know where they were all coming from or who sent them. We only knew they were more than just ordinary playing cards. You get that down?
Yep, more than cards, got it.
Are you invested yet?
No.
Okay, I'll keep going. And it was happening all around the world, in the north, in the south, they landed everywhere. Together with my new online friends from around the world, we invented a wicked new game we called Bakugan. Did you get it? I have like four or five more sentences. There's a lot.
My thought right now is, oh my god, our protagonist is Seto Kaiba.
No, don't you dare sully the name of Dan Kuso by comparing him to that capitalist.
I think you mean don't you dare sully the name of Seto Kaiba, most interesting character in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise.
Who has the most swag? Mm-hmm. Seto Kaiba is a character with infinite swag. Dan has none.
Dan has zero riz.
No riz. We will talk about this when we get we'll into get the look there. Of this show. But look at this.
Seto protagonist. Kaiba fucks. Dan Kuso, nah.
Look at this. Create an anime protagonist.
Anyway. Even more so, in the most recent season, he has a red streak in his hair.
Good for him. That'll add some character.
They're trying so hard.
Anyway, wicked new game. Mm-hmm. Bakugan.
Wicked new game.
That's when the power of the cards was revealed.
Oh, God.
Each one... No, stop thinking about Yu-Gi-Oh! Each one held its own battling beast that came to life when you threw it down. Stop thinking about Yu-Gi-Oh!
I'm thinking about Yu-Gi-Oh! You can't stop me!
Battles were intense, and if you choose the wrong card, you lost it, and the beast inside. But that's only half the story. I spent seven sentences of this intro, but that's only half the story.
Where's the other seven sentences?
Well, another even bigger battle was taking place in a parallel universe called Vestroia. Here's where I clocked out.
Yeah, it's honestly same.
My name is Dan, along with my stupid shit-heel online friends. We are the Bakugan
Battle
Brawlers.
That's not the line!
I did not write down all their names. Like I said, I tuned out at this point. So, there you go. This is all you need to know about Bakugan Battle Brawlers. Are you prepared to go down to Toys R Us and buy some?
I mean, if I were a child in 2008, which I was, yes.
Damn it. It worked.
Of course it worked. They were collectible.
So, this show here. Have you ever seen Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Beyblade?
Yes, both.
Well, as it turns out, kids' games involving cards and hunks of plastic, when you combine the two here for Bakugan, you have a guaranteed hit on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just sprinkle in some maybe intrigue about how the game is real and has mass ramifications for a parallel universe where this card game is not just a card game, it's for real, and it writes itself.
Yeah, I don't know how to tell you that even at, like, 13, which I was when this show aired, I was down for that.
So, at this point with Bakugan Battle Brawlers, when this hit the market, for whatever reason, I fell hook, line, and sinker to every other attempt of Japan to sell my child brain just hunks of plastic in the form of cards and toys. Mm-hmm. Like, I was all in on Beyblade, I was all in on Yu-Gi-Oh!, and I, to this day, still buy every iteration of the Pokemon game franchise.
Oh, dang.
Bakugan did not work on me.
I mean, technically, in the sense of spending my parents' money, none of them worked on me.
Uh-huh.
But I did sure as shit watch every single show.
Okay, so you did covet it, is the thing.
Yes, that was the thing, is I had parents who were like, no, we're not gonna waste our money on these little plastic, whatchamacallit. Well, yeah, marbles in this case, tops in the case of Beyblades. They did buy me Pokemon cards, but not from the source, only from other people.
I'm
trying to think of a fourth option, because I'm pretty sure there was a fourth one that I was like, can I have? And they were like, no.
Battle Beatamon.
It might have been Battle Beatamon is the thing.
This is like the second time in our conversation today before recording where I've just said, like, you've asked, like, what is the other thing? And the answer has always been Battle Beatamon.
It's always Battle Beatamon. And the thing is, yeah, I probably would have. Wait, no, it was Blue Dragon. Blue Dragon had an accompanying card game.
Of course it did.
Yeah.
Damn you, Akira Toriyama.
You cannot beat him.
No, that man is set for life, and good for him.
And if Mare had an accompanying toy line, which they should have, it was set up for one, I would have been on board with that.
Okay, well, this, with Bakugan Battle Brawlers, this was the one time, for whatever reason, something clicked in my child brain, and I realized, like, I'm being sold something. They just want my pocket money. I don't know why, but for some reason I was able to, like, peer through the subterfuge here of, like, no, it's a real series with real characters, and it's a great story that we're going to develop over 3 seasons, and I could just hear the subliminal, like, bye, 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 bye.
Give us your money!
I don't know why it was with this one specifically.
Give us your parents' money.
Give us your parents' money. Yeah, that's the truth of it. But I don't know why it was with this one where I could just see through the veil and it's like, nah. Oh, what's that?
It's because this was the most advertised.
It's true, because it was a Teletoon staple. This is a Teletoon original show.
Mm-hmm.
So they were marketing the hell out of it.
They played the ads for the toys everywhere. Like, even as the YTB one. I think I saw the ads more than I saw the show.
Yeah, probably. And, like, don't get us wrong, but, like, Beyblade, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, they were shameless with their advertising.
Absolutely.
Like, even, aspect of those things.
The 2003 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series, without having seen a single episode, I know every single word of the theme song, because they used it for all the toy commercials.
Yep, you would just hear that on loop, and it would just worm its way into your brain and drive your instinct to beg your parents for it.
Yeah. Like, the first time, because I did later in life watch that, and then when that, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, I was like, wait, why do I know this?
I don't know why I'm being so cynical with Bakugan Battle Brawlers, maybe because it's just past my time. Like, I was fully out of anime and cartoons that where their only purpose was to sell me things, and I'm just more into like, no, it can be an art form too. Let's see, I we're roughly the same age, so I must have been 13 at the time too. Maybe I was just on. Maybe I was like, man, no, anime should be adult now.
I wasn't quite there as the thing when Bakugan first came out. I think I was 14. I was 14 when I first saw Elfin Lied, and that was my, like, oh, actually, this is, like, super mature for grown-ups.
This is the real shit.
Yeah. Well, because like, Elfin Lied has titties and blood, so, like, obviously, that's for grown-ups, right?
No, that's been the, that's how I've organized all of my viewing habits as an adult. If it has to have at least one of those two things.
Yeah.
Both, the better.
Both, that's the, it's more mature when it has both.
Yeah. See our side series, Cartoon Night Detour, the Scenic Detour.
None of those shows have titties.
Producing Parker did.
Yeah, but I've erased that from my brain.
You can't. I won't let you. Anyway, anyway, so Bakugan Battle Brawlers, it's exactly what you think. The intro does kind of cover it, even though it is barely introduces this whole other deeper layer of intrigue to the world. It's just, there is a card game involving these little marbles that has taken the world by storm due to some unexplained phenomenon related to an alternate universe. Are you not excited? Guess what? All of the Bakugan start talking eventually, and they're real things, and they're real monsters, and the balance of the universe lays in wake because of something to do with these creatures. I did not get this.
I'm going to start with a critique.
Okay, please. I think we've only been critiquing so far, but go on.
But, like, more of a constructive. I think this, the story of, like, for any sort of fantastical thing like this, it helps if either the world is already like that, and then your whole, like, your education as a viewer is you're catching up on the rest of the world that everyone else is used to. Or it's a normal world that one day suddenly changes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what Bakugan is. I think for that to make sense, we need to have started earlier than this show does.
Right. By the time we get into the show in media res, there's already a worldwide ranking system for this game that was apparently invented by just some 11-year-old.
Yeah, some 11-year-old who is not even in the top 100 players of the game.
He
invented. Yeah, like, Shun, the other guy who invented it, because, like, even though he says me and my online friends invented it, canonically it was just Dan and Shun who invented this. And Shun is number one as of this episode. He is the number one ranked player. So that makes sense. Dan fucking sucks at the game he invented, which is very funny to me.
Yeah, in like the first battle, he's confronted with something he's never seen before in the game he invented.
Which is one of the core six elements. Like, he's like, oh, I'm the best player in the world. And then he's like, hi, my element is Earth. And he's like, what are you talking about? That's an element that doesn't even exist.
He's been winging it up to this point.
Absolutely he has been. I'm going to say, Shun invented it, and Dan was just there, not paying attention.
Taking all the credit.
Yeah, I totally invented it with my buddies.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about the world sudden, like, where to begin with this whole idea of Bakugan Battle Brawlers.
Because it's sloppily handled. Yeah, I think the act of everything being normal and then suddenly fucking cards were raining from the sky, that's interesting.
I feel like that should have been a bigger story.
Yeah, like, where did these cards come from? Because we're thrown into this whole, like, okay, the game is just a game is the thing. Like, cards rained from nowhere, and the people who caught them were like, I guess we might as well, they're cards, we might as well make a game with them.
And then they started producing marbles as well, and then when they started playing this game, they realized they were entering into, like, an interdimensional space where the entirety of the world freezes for a minute.
Yeah, time stops during every Bakugan match.
I feel like we need to spend more time on that.
Yeah.
Like, reality pauses so these kids can play a little game.
Yeah, that's something that, like, that's a world-building element that is, like, actively interesting. And this world is so bored of it.
Because we're dealing with these young, like, 11-year-old protagonists. They just want to play the game. They don't care.
Yeah. And then, like, so the whole, oh, I think that this game might be more than a game that we're handed is kind of dumb.
It doesn't really work. I mean, do they ever attempt to interject as much backstory as they can into this first episode?
God, they try.
But because it's introducing, they're not complex concepts. They are just explaining the elements of this game and that make up this alternate parallel universe called Vestroia.
It's worse Yu-Gi-Oh! And we all know it.
It is. But in that little moment where we see this ongoing struggle between the forces of that parallel universe, it's just an info dump.
Yeah. Honestly, I think this episode would have been a lot better if they hadn't even touched on Vestroia at all.
Yes. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. If it had been a straightforward, like, we're introduced to Dan, we're introduced to his friends, we are introduced to the mechanics of the game, because that
is... I still don't know how this game works. Like, in the fiction of the show, I don't know how you play this game.
I looked up a wiki how.
You, like, play the game for real in, like, life, but...
Yeah,
as
but,
we all
I
know,
mean,
it's...
some of the rules do seem transferable.
I guess so, but this is the weird thing about this Bakugan game that they're playing. Mm. So, you open this field, which stops reality, you pick your monsters, and they fight corresponding to the environment, and the bigger number wins.
It is very much the bigger number wins. That is also how the physical game works. Big number good.
Always good.
From what I can tell, there's no... Even though there are six elements, there's no, like, Pokemon strengths weaknesses.
Despite the six elements, you'd think there'd be some... I mean...
You would think, but in physical game, there doesn't seem to be... It doesn't fucking matter. So the fact that all of your protagonists, so, like, Dan and all of his buddies are each, like, they all specialize in one of the elements, it does not fucking matter.
Yeah, and you go 3 out of 5 rounds, and then you use magic and trap cards, ability cards.
Ability cards. In order
to curve the game in your favor, and that's kind of it. Because, so, they're not even, like, instructing their monsters to attack?
No, it's just, like, by virtue of appearing on this game's sphere, they are assuming that they are in battle.
This is just card dogfighting.
It is! It's Pokemon, but worse.
Yeah, at least you are supposed to, in the fiction of the series of Pokemon, form a bond with your Pokemon, train them, give them moves. Like, they cover up the unfortunate dogfighting aspect of Pokemon.
Yeah.
This one, they just summon their monsters and they just start, like, grappling.
Yep.
Riveting stuff here.
And then, depending on what environment they're in, one might gain or lose the upper hand.
I don't care.
Yeah, no, it's not a terribly interesting game. I think especially fully discarding the elemental strengths or weaknesses definitely makes it even weaker somehow.
Yeah, and at least in this first episode, I don't know, maybe by episode 47, I will be really invested in this parallel universe, but... This is my... I pulled out one line of dialogue that made me realize, like, I am so out of tune with whatever is going on in the screen, on the screen, that I am just numbed into a state of indifference.
Yeah.
It's when the two dragons, Drago and what is the white one named?
God, you're asking a lot of me to remember.
It doesn't matter. So the essential villain of the series that goes out of his way to harness the two conflicting forces of Vestroia, it doesn't matter. Good dragon in this scenario, he looks at the white dragon and says this line of dialogue. I suspect you are the one behind the human called Michael.
I know.
What the fuck does that mean?
I know who Michael is.
I suspect you were the one behind the human called Michael.
Okay, so I did a thing.
Please do not tell me you looked up the lore.
No, I looked up the Bakugan website on the Wayback Machine, circa 2008.
Good.
Because I wanted to know what the website looked like when this website came out, when the show came out.
Probably a lot of red there.
Yeah. So, in the main characters tag of the Bakugan website, which is admittedly hard to get to, every time I try to spend too long on the website, it boots me back to the main page. I think because a lot of this original website was made on Flash. It keeps trying to load it. And then it shifts to Ruffle.
Oh, okay.
Which is like a new way of trying to load old Flash. And so then because it's trying to load like a brand new thing on a website from 2008, it boots me back to the main page. So it's very hard to dig deep into this website. But I did find the page for Michael.
Great.
He's an elderly researcher in his 50s. He was the first person to discover a portal between an alternate universe known as Vestroia and our world. After teleporting himself to the other dimension, Michael was quickly sucked up by the evil force of the Silent Core and transformed into a megalomaniac scientist. Megalomaniac scientist. After returning to Earth as Hal G, he immediately recruited Masquerade in an attempt to help him destroy all the Bakugan standing in his way. So, Michael is the main villain of this season, I believe.
Huh? What? Sorry, I was just looking on eBay. What were you saying?
I forgot.
Great. Just one indication of attempting to set up a future plot line here, but man, just hearing that line dropped between two dragons who are just arguing in a nether space of fire, I suspect you are the one behind the human called Michael.
Yeah. So the evil dragon basically, that Canadians fear? The evil dragon, I believe, just gave Michael the technology to teleport.
And then the evil dragon is destroyed?
Or, like, he's... I don't know if destroyed, but he's not having a good time.
Okay, so he creates a portal to go to the core of this... This doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. He creates
a portal to go to the center of this parallel universe and finds the two conflicting forces of the universe, infinity and silence.
Yeah, those are the two genders.
Oh, yeah. Which way, Western man? And if he absorbs them, and did I get this dialogue right? If he absorbs them, he can fuse with algae? Halgy. Okay.
Halgy.
I thought he meant like algae as in the plant scum.
Yeah.
This is why I was so lost. And then my immediate next note in my notes, this is incomprehensible nonsense.
Halgy is
He's the evolved form of Michael. He's the digivolved form of Michael.
Yeah, only two of our main cast gets a digivolve. The other one is Masquerade. Her other form is Alice.
Spoilers.
Spoilers for this show from 2008 that neither of us are gonna watch.
I don't know. You seem pretty invested.
That's my brand, Chris. I can get invested in anything.
It's true. So I guess it's a good time, Annie, to talk a little bit about the look of the show.
I mean, I guess. But I have a
generic is the word that comes to mind.
I have a question.
Yes.
Why it look like that?
Well, it looked like that because we are dealing with a little thing called anime.
Mm-hmm.
We don't usually get to talk about this when we, this beloved segment of Cartoon Night in Canada, when we talk about anime on this program.
But yeah, because usually when we're talking about anime, it's because we're saying, fuck whatever it looks like.
I mean, I don't think it's like that, but...
No, I'm pretty sure you've used those exact words.
I probably did, because that's sort of my humor style. Anyway, yeah. This show is just bright, clean, generic shonen style with some of the most uninspired character design I think I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, especially, this is... what, 2008? Okay. This looks like it should have been made in 2002.
I would, yes. It's very... This just screams early 2000s for me.
It screams Digipaint.
It screams Digipaint, yes.
Yeah, like, that early 2000s, we are literally just now figuring out how to make anime digitally. It screams that era.
Yeah.
I mean, even right down to the fact that our protagonist is wearing UFO pants.
He's wearing UFO pants, and you better believe he's got goggles on his forehead.
He's got goggles! Which
and
is...
a half jacket, and my god, is this the most protagonist that a protagonist has ever protagonized?
Yeah, like, this is peak anime.
Yeah,
this is peak early 2000s anime.
This
which
is
bad because this is not early 2000s anime. This is late 2000s. So this is like we've had a full like 7 years to figure out how we want things to look, and
it feels
still...
immediately dated.
Yeah, like this is outdated as of the time that it was created.
Like the design sensibilities of anime has left this style in the past.
I must emphasize. Bakano came out the same year.
Yeah,
I don't think
I've
said this on podcast. My favorite anime of all time came out the same year as Bakugan Battle Brawlers. And the way it fucking looks compared to this, night and day.
Yeah, I mean, that's a grossly unfair comparison.
I don't think it is.
Well, I'm just saying...
The same, similar, I'm assuming similar budgets... similar time constraints. Granted, Bakugan had more to do.
True, and we all know that Bakano trading card game did not really take off.
It could have, though.
No, it could not.
I'd buy a Trail Racer card.
Yeah, you would. You would.
but I'd buy anything that they did.
Look, the thing with Bakugan Battle Brawlers is you look at like some of the key images and promotional stills from this series, and you do not get a hint of personality emanating from it.
The thing is, too...
I know it's hard to quantify, but you look at this thing, and it just seems so paint-by-numbers uninteresting.
The thing that really sticks out to me is that I have a full playlist of the Bakugan toy commercial. None of them really use clips from the anime.
Which doesn't make any sense, because even in this relationship between art and commerce, where this show, its sole purpose was to sell the toy.
Yeah.
You would still assume that the marketing branch, like the thing that's hooking kids into and like subliminally informing them to buy things, is the show.
You would
That's
think.
The thing that they should be attached to.
But like, they're really... Instead, like, occasionally they'll use... Usually the only clips from the show that they use are clips of the Bakugan themselves transforming into the critter. But there's nothing of the characters, because they know that people are not invested in the characters they've created.
No, everybody loves Dan. Everyone loves Dan Protagonist. He's, like, my favorite character in the whole of anime.
See, and that's, I mean, that it comes down to, I don't know how much of it has been informed by how much shonen anime I've watched. Any single time a protagonist is a fire element boy, I immediately tune out.
Look, the best comparison that I always, we've talked about, like, before we start recording, these little, like, time... stretches where the big selling toy anime of the month, like of the flavor of the era, where it's like we bundled them together. It's like Yu-Gi-Oh and Beyblade were together, like that, like they hit at the same time, and they were just bombarding the children of the West with their thinly veiled advertisements. The thing is, though, you go back to something like Beyblade, and maybe this is just because I came of age and I was at the perfect impressionable mindset to be hooked in by Beyblade. But you look at the protagonist for Beyblade, whose name I believe is Tai, and there is...
That sounds right.
there's no, like, vastly different original character design going on with him. Like, he is also just paint-by-numbers, card-carrying anime protagonist.
Yeah, there are rules for your anime protagonist, especially when, like, elemental powers come into play.
But it's even...
Your
yes.
protagonist, your male protagonist must be a fire boy.
If oh, and is, Ty has a red jacket, don't worry.
If it is magical girl, fire is also an option. I've seen Magic Knight Rayearth. Fire is also an option for your protagonist, but light is generally the element of your femme protagonist.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's just because I'm much more kinder to the things that I personally spent money on when I was a child.
As one does.
I'm looking at this Ty character with his backwards cap, his vest, his red vest and yellow long shirt, and his fingerless gloves, and I'm thinking, like, no, that is a legitimate protagonist. I'm looking at Dan, I'm thinking, like, you
generic schlop of a man.
You designed by a committee nothing.
Looking at, I'm sorry, I just pulled up the Beyblade main cast. This, to me, looks like Yu-Gi-Oh! By way of, like, DBZ by way of Dot Hack.
Yeah. A true melange of a character.
Yeah.
Of a cast, rather.
Yeah, and, like, because I remember Beyblade also.
Yeah, what do you think of the very obvious use of CGI in this show?
Oh, it wasn't great. The fucking...
I was charmed.
The one that got me was when... The only time that I was like, oh, this is fine, was when the first battle started.
Mm-hmm.
Because the CGI was on the pigeons.
Yeah.
And the dad's pudding.
Oh my god, the pudding. I loved it so much. Where did he get this reboot pudding?
Where is that reboot pudding coming from?
It looks amazing. It sticks out like a sore thumb, because why was that the thing that they wanted to use CGI animation for?
What got me was that during that same sequence, you know, time is slowing down, so you use CGI to show the pigeons and the pudding slowing down. But, like, during that exact moment, there are a lot more keyframes.
Yeah.
Than I would expect. Like, there's a lot of work put in, specifically the hair animation for Dan. Mm-hmm.
Genuinely impressive bit of animation here. And that is the personal touch of Mitsuo Hashimoto, because, I mean, his direction is fine.
It's good!
Yeah, like, I have no complaints here about it. It's just, I don't care one iota for this show.
Yeah, it's good direction in the service of bad writing, bad...
Story world building.
Yeah.
Bad...
I do, okay, I lied. I love the character beat of this stupid little, like, Pokedex.
It's a literal Pokedex. I was so
it's just a Pokedex?
Dumbfounded. Like,
it is
how,
a Pokedex
how blatant.
With a standard cell phone keypad.
Yeah.
Like, it's got your numbers, your 0 through 9, a star, and a pound sign. This is just a cell phone they've reprogrammed for Bakugan. Because
in this
world, that's a game. Which, again, would be a much more interesting thing if, for, like, maybe, I'm gonna say for the first 3 episodes, if they had set up Bakugan as just being a game, and then it was like, oh shit, no, it's actually not, there's interdimensional shit going on, it would be more like, oh fuck, stakes!
Yeah, keep that long-ass intro beginning every episode to tease the fact that we're gonna add depth to this simple... competition anime involving these kids playing a game.
I must again bring up Avatar The Last Airbender, where, like, for the pilot episode of that series, Katara has a different intro.
Mm-hmm.
The pilot episode is just about, like, oh, I think the Avatar will come back one day. Because at that point, you're watching the pilot episode, you don't know that the Avatar is back and is Aang.
Yeah, it's fine. It does the job.
Yeah. So for a show like this, you don't need to tell us that there's interdimensional bullshit going on. You can just say, hey, one day cards fell from the fucking sky, and so my buddies and I made a game about it. And your audience is probably going to go, okay, these balls that turn into little monsters, I'm in. Because I'm assuming your audience is like 8 to 11 years old.
You would hope so, yeah.
You'd hope. And so you're thinking like, oh, okay, yeah, like, I'm down for a random toy that will turn into a fun little monster. Yeah, tell me about the logic of this world. And then, a handful of episodes in, you're like, oh, fuck, there's interdimensional conflicts tied to my card game. You're already invested, you're already in, that's fine.
Yeah, I think we said it before, what you really needed was the first episode of Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Monsters, the American-Canadianized version of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime, where it's just the first episode is a duel between Yugimoto and Seto Kaiba.
I'm sorry, Bakugan Battle Brawlers, you clearly just wanted to be Yu-Gi-Oh! Why didn't you learn from it?
Why you say something like that? Why you say that shit?
Because I'm right.
No, you are pulling at straws here.
Everyone just wants to be Yu-Gi-Oh! And they're just not good at it.
One of the most lucrative anime franchises of all time? No, nobody wants to be that.
Yeah, everyone wants to be Yu-Gi-Oh!
Look,
get good scrubs!
Look, the dozens upon dozens upon dozens upon dozens of Yu-Gi-Oh! Card sets that are making God knows how much revenue. We could just translate that success into these little marbles.
See, everything I know about Yu-Gi-Oh! Passed. Like, into you, because I knew of Yu-Gi-Oh! GX. I even knew about the motorcycle one.
5D?
5D.
Yeah.
But everything I know
that?
About...
Why should I know that?
You really shouldn't have. But everything I know about the lore of it, I learned from Karina Farrick, who has, like, a breakdown of, like, why Seto Kaiba is the most interesting character in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise. And that's the thing. Is that there are interesting characters in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise.
Don't tell me you're gonna start badmouthing my main man, Dan.
I'm gonna start badmouthing your main man, Dan, because he's boring!
Dan? Daniel? Danny to his friends?
Okay, but even... Okay, let's look at the opposite of Dan for this franchise, because Yugi is the Dan of Yu-Gi-Oh! So that would imply that Shun should be the Kaiba of Bakugan.
Well, we don't see him. He has, like, one line of dialogue in the first episode.
He has a single line of dialogue, and he's implicated. I mean, the fact that he's, like, he is the number one player right now.
That's the other thing, which I understand their intention behind it. They are trying to build out this idea that this is an international sensation, Bakugan is, mm-hmm. where all the main characters, this whole Bakugan battle brawler clan, they're scattered around the world.
Yes, except three of them are in the same town?
It's how that usually works, but that's the problem here, is that God knows how long we're just going to be palling around with Dan.
And that's like, the entire series, is we're going to be palling around with Dan, he's our protagonist.
Yeah, but you need a crew with him. Like, Yugi's got Joey, he's got Tia, he's got Tristan, mm-hmm. he's got a fourth one. I don't know. It's been a while.
I can think of as Kaiba's little brother, but... Mokuba!
Mokuba! God, we gotta save Mokuba.
But he's not there for any of it.
We also got his grandpa, we've got My Valentine. Like, you have a cast of characters who are, like, a part of his crew. You need the... Not to bring it to JoJo, but you need the JoJo Bizarre Adventure team.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the problems, is that Bakugan is trying to be that for the internet age.
It's trying to be Digimon.
And Digimon, like, they're in the same room, often.
Like, man, this is just wearing all of its inspirations in quotes, by the way, on its sleeve.
Yeah, like, it's trying to be Yu-Gi-Oh, Digimon, Pokemon, all at the same time.
You know what this genuinely feels like? It feels like, and this is probably the case for all of them, like, all of these combination anime toy line media entities.
You talking shit about my guy Beyblade?
It genuinely feels like they started with the toy line first and then realized, oh shit, we gotta create an anime and manga attached to this, that's how you sell it. And
that's you talking shit about my guy Beyblade?
That's the case for all of them. That is the case for all of them. Like, Pokemon, the anime series, feels iconic, but it was absolutely an afterthought to
100%.
The card game and the video game series. But in all those cases, they put in the time to make those adaptations have legs and feel like their own separate entities opposed from the selling point. I don't get that same kind of depth coming from Bakugan Battle Brawlers, at least from the first two episodes that I watched.
Gosh, you know what I also don't get that from?
What?
Fucking Mare.
Man, you got an axe to grind.
I do!
I like it. You know what's... before we get into the cast, before we get into the Canada Dub section of Canada Dubcember, what's a major problem for me is... we've already talked about the uninspired character design, but all of these supposedly collectible balls, like these marbles that are the whole selling point of the series,
yeah,
they all look the same.
They do. I pulled up the shot of like Dan before he goes, before he leaves on his grand beating up some asshole's bully brother.
You mean when he's checking out his stash?
He's checking out his stash.
Literal line of dog. I gotta check out my stash.
Rule number one, I'm bored as tears of the fact that he has a single element, because again, there's no elemental like strengths or weaknesses to this entire franchise.
Yeah, at least in, again, not to compare this to Yu-Gi-Oh, but we have to compare it to Yu-Gi-Oh. At least when they have people who are experts in a certain type of card type, you know, you got the Bugman, you got the dinosaur guy, like. That makes sense, because they're collecting those cards, and they build a whole deck around the strategy using those cards.
I mean, that works for the, from what I have ascertained of, like, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Meta, is that it makes sense to build out, like, you get good at one element or one genre of card.
And or then one you strategy.
Build, yeah, you build a deck around your strategy, around maybe, like, three or four amazing cards you have, and then you build your deck around that. This is just sort of like you kind of build your deck around whatever element you decided is cool.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, this goes right into like peak how to build your protagonist force world.
Yeah.
You know, your water group is the nerd. Your protagonist is fire.
I am assuming Shun uses dark.
Shun uses air. He's weird in terms of anime and like not rivals.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're fire v air. See, if I were writing this, I would have made Shun be water.
But he's got a dark aesthetic to him.
He's got a dark aesthetic, but he's Dan's rival. Not antagonist, but rival. So making him the opposite would have made sense. But, you know, the folks who wrote this have seen Sailor Moon, so they know that the water person needs to be the nerd.
God, I... yeah. Yeah, again, wearing their inspirations on their sleeve, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Marucho is the water person. The girl whomst is the romanceable is light.
Which, is that the Hatsune Miku hair one?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay.
The one who is not into the protagonist in the first episode, of course that's the love interest.
Yeah, okay. It's very tsundere.
Yeah. I'm not into you, baka.
Meanwhile, the girl in Vegas is all over his riz.
Yeah, of course she is. She is, I think she's the earth of the group. Yeah.
None of these assignments of elements make any sense.
I mean, they do if you've seen other elemental anime.
God, no. I have not and never will.
Yeah, no, the only one that truly doesn't make sense is Shun, the antagonist, because it would have been interesting for him to have been dark type, but I think they're trying to go for like a, oh, dark type is evil. So then they just gave him air because Great. It was like, oh, that's the one that's left.
Man, and also these creature designs are not interesting at all.
Nah, they're pretty bland.
It's the main selling one, like the main poster child for this series is
just a dragon.
Wonder where they got that from.
That still is. I pulled up the Bakugan website as of right now. As of 2023. The design of the Bakugan hasn't changed at all.
No, why would you? Why change perfection?
Yeah, really only the design of the characters, the human characters has changed. And they got better.
Well, I looked up the 2023 series and I noticed that like the promotional poster has a Shiba Inu in a hoodie.
Yeah, there is that.
So already better show.
Yeah, there's all
better character design.
A cat and an ascot. Their names are Murph and Little Jasper.
There you go.
Yeah, improved.
I'm already planning my trip to Toys R Us to buy some Bakugan. I mean, it's crazy now that, like, the cynical sphere of just, we're gonna create a show designed to sell toys, and we don't really have to spend that much time on it. We can just pull from the past 7 years of anime, throw it all in a blender, and just come up with something, and we'll have a successful show. You can't really get away with that right now. Because it's so much harder to sell toys.
Yeah, the playing field is a lot wider right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a lot more... I honestly think that the difficulty now is having to design the human characters more so than the buddy characters.
You need some actual protagonists here.
Yeah, like your human characters are now the focus. And it's like, yeah, you can make as cool of a monster character as you want. And like,
do that in the original run.
Yeah, but the thing is that your competitors in the anime toy selling field are also focusing on the monsters. And so like the smart thing to do is to focus on your human characters and make them something for your audience to relate to. Because then they're going to go, oh, yeah, that's my guy. And also his T-Rex buddy.
You need a core. You need a foundation to this whole enterprise.
Yeah, your monster characters are just that. They're your monsters. But your human characters are the one that your people are going to relate to.
If we were living in the darkest timeline and the protagonist of the original Pokemon anime was not Ash Ketchum, but Dan Kuzo, I don't think we'd have the media enterprise that is, multimedia enterprise that is Pokemon
Absolutely
today.
Absolutely not. I'm going to say Ash Ketchum is not the core of the, even the original Pokemon anime. Ketchum is kind of just there. It was Brock and Misty that people cared about.
And Team Rocket!
And Meowth!
You had a great cast of characters there.
I see Bakugan Battle Brawlers, even though I watched the shit out of the show when I could get it. It was on Sundays on YTV. But, like, I look at Bakugan, and I see Beyblade, I see Yu-Gi-Oh!, I see Pokemon, I see, like...
Digimon, I see...
Yeah, like, I don't think at any point it was trying to be its own show.
I don't think it has an identity.
No, it's just trying to be either selling toys or, hey, we remember what this show used to do good.
And we'll do a less good version of it.
Yeah. And I think that continues into the cast. I don't think a single member of this cast is really giving it 100%.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess that about is our thoughts on Bakugan Battle Brawlers. Time to get into the meat of any pseudo-Canadub episode. They're fine, I guess.
I'd say it's fine. No one is giving it I'm guessing no one is even giving it, like, their 80%.
It feels so weird when we reach the cast of one of these... I mean, this is a dubbed anime for all intents and purposes.
Like, this one, yes.
And it just feels so weird that I don't have more to say or more notes to pull out of their performances. I mean, there's plenty of the usual suspects in this cast.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing, is this is a lot of voice actors that we have dealt with before. These are a lot of voice actors that we know can do very, 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 very well.
We've encountered them doing very well in the past and will in the future, but...
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe their hearts just weren't in this one.
I don't think that's an exaggeration. I don't think it's hard to say that everyone fucking phoned it in for this show.
Yeah.
I watched the show, I loved this show. It's not a good show.
No, I'm right there with you. Yeah. So I guess we'll just run down the main battle brawlers.
For sure. So in our lead as Dan, we've got Scott McCord.
Having an off day here.
Having an off day! Yeah, and so he's been around. Skullboy, he was Owen in Total Drama Rama and Total Drama Island. That was the big one. I don't know why I pulled up Drama Rama before Island. But yeah.
Like, that's all the same shit.
It's Total Drama, the cinematic universe. But yeah, he's been a main character in Total Drama since five ever. He was in The 11th Hour, a show that only I remember.
Man, this is just the most base level anime protagonist voice. Like,
it's... Ew, speaking of, he's the main character in Paw Patrol.
Hey, that is lucrative. You get that bag, sir.
Get that bag, but also, like, maybe stop being in Copaganda.
I mean, getting that bag indicates a secret level of shame, so... It's hard to hear your criticisms of Copaganda over all this money.
Yeah, but it's super easy for me to be like, actually, fuck all of Paw Patrol.
Really coming knives out for Paw Patrol.
Fuck Paw Patrol. No, seriously, no. Though. Fuck Paw Patrol.
Strong words for Paw Patrol. I've just been enjoying going up to every child I see and say, listen, ACAB also means you're...
ACAB also means the fucking Paw Patrol dog.
Defund the police and send the Paw Patrol to the shelter. Anyway, who else?
So for Miku, Hatsune Miku, but also she does light anime, is Julie Lemieux, your friend and mine.
I mean, there's no point even going over her career. We've done it plenty of times in the past. It's just, what? Why is there nothing here for her to do?
This feels like a casting just because it's her.
I suppose so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even recognize her voice.
No, I didn't either. I recognized the voice that she's doing for this character, and I was like, oh, wait, what? Oh no.
This is a weird case for an anime dub where they aren't using the usual suspects, who, like, people who made a career out of voicing anime.
Yeah.
These are the Nelvana suspects. These are the ones that we usually cover, like, the names that usually come up in our other episodes where we're doing just shows that aired either on YTV or Teletoon, just... general run-of-the-mill industry voice actors.
This is very much a cast of voice actors being like, hey, do an anime voice.
Yeah, it's a lot to... And not realizing that that's a whole other skill set that you kind of have to get the vibe for, specifically with one of these shonen anime that is like a whole other kind of style of entertainment. Like, the skills aren't really transferable.
Speaking of, in terms of Julie, the character Julie flirting with Dan a whole bunch in episode one. It's Katie Griffin!
Weird.
That's my girl Sailor Mars.
Weird. I mean,
honestly,
like I said, it's not the usual suspect, but sometimes it is.
Truly, sincerely, she does the best out of the whole gang.
Yeah, with the three lines of dialogue she gets in the first episode.
Yes. I mean, granted, there's also that fact that we don't have a whole lot to go off of. Most of this episode is between our guy Dan and then Shunji?
Shunji, yeah.
Yeah, the Earth Elemental user that he doesn't know what Earth Elemental is, despite the fact that Julie is an Earth Bakugan player.
Well, he doesn't care about his friends.
It's true.
He doesn't listen to them.
He sucks.
Man, just to think that, like, the majority of your, like, main cast, your main group, is introduced in chat windows.
Well, I mean, this show came out in 2007, 2008. That feels like an attempt to try and bring Pokemon into the digital age, which Digimon was already doing, but okay.
This is why I compared it earlier, but, like, that's not interesting, and I'd imagine with some of the later episodes in this first season, we would get, like, episodes centered on some of the side cast?
I assume so, given how prominently all of the cast is featured and how much detail we get about them. I assume they're going to be a bigger deal later on.
Because only so much character can come across when you're just dealing with a chat window that is just listening to Dan talk about how wicked he is.
Yeah,
man,
so
this protagonist sucks.
Runo, Hatsune Miku girl. Apparently she and Dan were like childhood friends, but neither of them remember being childhood friends.
That's because of the Bakugan.
Yeah, anyway, they're going to be romantically entangled in later seasons.
Because of the Bakugan.
Because of the Bakugan.
Whenever there's something that you don't really understand, it's like, oh, the Bakugan did it.
And it's like, Bakugan. And then Marucho, Marukama, Marukura, sorry. He's the small blonde boy.
Right. Little note there. Like, so, are they all the same age?
Yes. They're all 11 years old.
Because
Japanese 12 years old in the North American dub.
This little blonde sailor boy looks like he's 5.
He looks like he's a child. He's not. It's Cameron Ansell for just this episode and the next one that we watch.
He's actually 3,000 years old.
No, he gets replaced by Joe Vanicola.
Probably a trade-up?
Yeah, probably.
It's so hard to judge their performances, honestly, because we
get
so
on, like,
little
a
from
line.
Them.
We're working on a line. However, all I need to know about this Cameron Ansell is that they were in Stormhawks, so they're fine in my books.
A nice niche of not quite anime that they've carved out to themselves.
Exactly.
Is that the whole crew? Is there another one?
There's one more. Well, there's Shun.
Oh, right. The only other character of the group that we get, like, a full body shot of.
Yeah, and that's, he is voiced by Zachary Bennett.
Who, I guess, gives an okay performance.
He does fine. Really, truly, the only person we really get to know in this episode is Scott McCord's Dan. And, like, I think he does the worst job of everyone involved in this episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's his fault or if it's just because the writing is such garbage.
A little from column A, a little from column B?
Yeah, let's say.
How about a little from column A, a lot from column B?
Yes, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Cut him some slack here because...
I mean, he
if your heart's
continues,
not into it, your heart's not
he
into
conti-
it. Yeah.
You know, he's got to take a break in between playing Owen and Total Drama.
I mean, that's the lucrative deal right there.
It is. Especially as Owen is like a... He will be there as long as Total Drama exists.
Okay, I haven't seen that show since I was a kid. Is that the big
fat
Canadian?
Yeah, he's the fat blonde one.
He's the big fat Canadian, okay.
Yeah. As long as Total Drama exists, Owen will be there.
Good. Secure your employment for future generations, because God knows they are never going to stop that series.
They better not. It's all Canada's got at this point.
That is a show that we have, like, brought up in so many episodes and have never committed to actually talking about it, because I don't think either of us want to.
It would be very funny if neither of us talked about it ever.
Yeah, we go this entire run of this podcast, whatever, like, yeah, yeah, that's a thing that exists. We'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it someday.
No, we gotta talk about the important things, like Bakugan Battle Brawlers.
Like Bakugan Battle Brawlers. We can talk about Total Drama sometime in the future.
The weird thing is, like, as much shit as we've given Bakugan Battle Brawlers for being not good, every iteration of it has been successful.
Yeah, I mean, as far as shows for babies are, it's fine.
Like, this had a successful run of 4 seasons and sold God knows how many toys, and then the reboot ran for 5 seasons, and now this current one, it's still in season 1, but you know what? Maybe because it's on Netflix, it'll be canceled by season 2.
I mean, 100% will.
Yeah, probably. Okay. Any parting shots to take at Bakugan? The thing that we'll never talk about or think about again.
I don't think we're going to come back to Bakugan now. I loved it as a kid, is the weird thing. I don't think I can handle enough, like, Bakugan and Beyblade. I watched these shows. I watched them a lot as a tween. They're bad. Do not start these shows.
I have legitimately returned to watching a couple of episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh! Right around the time that the creator of it died tragically.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Rips is it the holds thing. Up. Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, fucking rips. Watch Yu-Gi-Oh! If you, like me, grew up watching Beyblade and Bakugan and Beat-em-on, and you're thinking, maybe I'll come back to these shows I'm nostalgic for, watch Yu-Gi-Oh! Instead. Just like, honestly, do yourself a favor. Watch Yu-Gi-Oh! Watch Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, even.
Yeah, despite it being cut from the same cloth of just capitalist enterprise,
yeah,
it's a legitimately fun show. It's nonsensical and completely incomprehensible to 2023 eyes.
Yeah, but in terms of
like what storytelling for anime was in the early 2000s, being handled by Western studios.
Yeah.
But I had a great time. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed returning to that.
Fun is the thing. Is the difference is that Yu-Gi-Oh! I like the characters.
That goes a long way.
Yeah.
That goes a long way. And also the game was fun.
Yeah. At the end of the day, just having characters, especially if you're adapting a silly little card game for children to a narrative format, make characters that, like, nostalgic 20-somethings are gonna look back on and go, like, let me do a deep dive into the psychology of my favorite character. No one is doing that for Bakugan, because none of the Bakugan characters are interesting enough to do that for.
It also helps to have some actually interesting monster design.
Yeah!
Thank you so much for joining us on this first installment of Canna Dubcember. I think was a rollicking success. We're both miserable because we didn't like this.
We crushed it.
Great. If you like what you heard, and how can you not, please consider giving us a like, share, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, preferably Apple Podcasts, because that helps us reach the widest possible audience. You can find the show on Twitter at Cartoon Night Pod, where we post new episodes every Saturday.
Except when we don't.
Sickness and in health, we post new episodes. Except when we don't. You can find myself on Twitter at CinemaCreep. Took me a moment to remember my handle. Where I will be diving deep into the competitive scene of Bakugan in 2023 and finding a way to climb the ranks and become the best that there ever was.
And you can find me at Sylvie Skeletons, where I'm calling that into doubt, because I am the number one buff.
The fuck? just blowing up my whole spot like that? How dare. Now we're done here.